This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place Nation Pop Experience Making Mount Rushmore is back. That's right. This is our 13th episode. Wow. This is we're entering our seventh month. It's been a great run so far. I am very excited. Every show is different because I have a different panel and we do different subjects. And tonight we're diving back into the sports world. Not talking about athletes. We're not talking about teams. We're not talking about, you know, plays. We're talking about the people that enhance the experience. These are the play-by-play and color commentators, those broadcasters that really, you know, educate you, call the plays, really bring the experience, you know, down to a personal level where you can relate and they can educate. All these, you know, they're really very important and vital to the sports viewer experience. So tonight, I have four gentlemen that are going to give me their Mount Rushmores. Let's go around the horn and introduce them and get the show on the road. First off, Jay Arsenio D'Amato. Johnny, how are you?
Hey, good evening. Great to be here. We got an eclectic crew, and we're going to bring some entertainment tonight.
That's right. Speaking of eclectic entertainment, we got Steve Bennett also on tonight.
Hey, guys. How's it doing? I'm excited. First time doing a pod with Roger and with John, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, wow.
Scott, not so much, but you too, for sure. No, I'm just kidding, Scott. I love you too, buddy. But we've done them before together.
Yes. Yes, being on with Roger and Johnny is quite a treat that I've done more than once. So you're a lucky man, Steve, to be doing this. Also, yeah, the aforementioned, the cowboy, Roger Morissette. How you doing, Roger?
Hey, doing great. Happy to be on. I don't do too many pods, Steve, so don't feel bad. This is I'm like the Yeti, right? It's the guy you don't see it very often, but looking forward to it. This is going to be a good one.
He lurks in the shadows until it's something like he really wants to talk about. Like,
You don't know I'm really going to be on until Andy calls and I actually answer. That's what we know.
Yeah. All right. And also rounding out the Podfather, Scott Criscolo. Hey, Scott.
I'm glad that Roger acknowledged that when he hugs, he humps you like a Yeti. So I'm very glad that he said that. But
I've been working on it, Scott.
I know.
It's a shame. It's okay.
You're a great hugger, Roger. Anyway, it's good to be here. This is, again, yes, I have been on many times with Mr. Bennett and Mr. D'Amato. I haven't been on with you, Roger, and I couldn't tell you how long. It's been a while. Andy, I was just on with 6 days ago. So anyway, this is a very ripe crew tonight, so let's jump in.
Well, we do co-host a show together, so kind of important to be on a show together. But first half tonight.
Did you ever just not say something? Just let the line go?
I will pause like you told me.
Yeah. Dramatic pause, meaning talk little or less.
Don't let him push you around, Andy.
I know. These fucking guests, I'll tell you. All right, let's go to somebody classy to start. Mr. D'Amato. Get your first play-by-play guy.
God, what are you, drunk?
What did Roger compare himself to the Yeti? He's more like the Wetty. Like a wet blanket he fucking throws on everything every time he opens his mouth.
Just because our opinions are a little different, John, doesn't mean I'm the wet blanket, okay?
This show's ending after tonight. All right.
After a terrific stop. All right, Johnny, give us your first play-by-play guy.
First play-by-play guy. It's going to be old school like me. The voice I grew up with watching Major League playoffs and World Series, Kurt Gowdy.
Ah, very good. Why don't you elaborate a little bit on why you picked him?
Well, basically it's nostalgia. He's as a youth growing up, every time you heard his gentle voice, it was you knew it was a big game, and he brought it. He never overstated and made himself made it about him. It's just a perfect voice growing up.
All right. I don't know much of Kurt's work, but I actually met his son Trevor Gowdy when I was working on a shoot for Outdoor Life. Anybody else have anything they want to add about? It wasn't on anybody else's list. Anybody have any thoughts on Kurt Gowdy they want to share?
Deserves to be considered, at the very least, an absolute legend, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kirk Gowdy was a guy that covered all sport. Oh, I don't know if he ever did hockey, but, I mean, he definitely did baseball. He obviously did football. by the time I really got to watching sports, he had pretty much retired. So I didn't really see a lot of him. Most of the stuff I've watched of him are you know, on ESPN Classic or YouTube or whatever. But I mean, regardless, he should be there. I mean, he probably was the first great TV play-by-play guy when TV really came into its own in the, you know, starting in the late 50s, throughout the 60s, throughout the 70s. So he definitely belongs there.
All right. Very good. All right, Steve, why don't you give us your first entrant on your play-by-play guy Hall of Fame?
All right. Well, when I was making my list, I did try to concentrate on people with a national profile. So I was looking for guys with that had at least one, if not two, you know, national contracts in a sport, like either the number one play-by-play guy for baseball on a network or whatever. And the number one guy is the first guy that I remember calling the World Series when I watched it. And he's the first voice that I remember hearing and thinking, okay, this is a big game today. You know, that when I heard Jack Buck was calling the game, I knew that meant it was a big game. You know, and obviously he did have a strong local presence with the Cardinals as well, but he was a number one play-by-play guy in football. He's called Super Bowls and World Series, and obviously the father of Joe Buck. I've been lucky enough to become friends with Joe Buck, and we've talked a lot about his father, how great his father really was, and, you know, a shout-out to his classic call of a "We'll See You Tomorrow Night," maybe his most famous call, I guess. Kind of cool that in 2011, his son, in a very similar situation, also said, "And we'll see you tomorrow night." So, Jack Buck, similar to what John said, just the first guy I remember growing up listening to and thinking, okay, it's a big game today. So,
All right, that's why he's good. On. Now, he wasn't on anybody else's. That's, you know, like I have to say, it's like Kirk Gowdy, all these guys, you know, just because they don't make somebody's list, because not everybody does honorable mentions, but there's always people always add. You guys have anything else to add about Jack Buck as well, though?
I think it's a great call, Steve. And a better call than Kirk Gowdy.
Jack Buck's one of those guys that's going to be a lot like one of my picks in that. Obviously, I knew him more on a national stage than I did a local stage. Obviously, all of us, well, most of us living in the Northeast, you know, we saw Jack Buck on the Game of the Week or, again, on CBS Radio doing the World Series or, you know, the NLCS. But yeah, he belongs when you're good enough as a local guy to be brought in as a national guy, you know that you're in that rarefied air, and Jack Buck most certainly is.
All right. Very good. All right. Roger, give us your first, pick for your Mount Rushmore.
Sure. Thanks. So I kind of went with the chalk, at least to me it was the chalk. I would imagine this guy appeared on more than one list. But I went with Al Michaels. And kind of similar to Steve, you know, if Al Michaels is calling the game, it's a big game. I believe he called the 1980 hockey game, right? If I'm not mistaken. And
obviously,
Monday Night Football. So just the legend, and to me, pretty clearly a top four, you know, Mount Rushmore play-by-play man.
All right. Johnny, you're This Week in NFL, This Week in Sports co-host also had him on his list.
Yeah, he gets one right. I mean, he's about a 1 out of 100 like this year, this past season. So that's his one that he probably is a good call.
It's true. It's not everybody bringing the Kirk Gowdy pizzazz to their answers, but I tried. I threw a dart. I got lucky. Thank you, John. I'll take the compliment.
Oh, God.
Johnny, Andy, do you have anything
Andy,
to add?
Andy here hosting the Dean Martin roast of podcasts here. All we need to do is be shit-faced, and it'll just be as exciting. Al Michaels is do you believe in miracles is the greatest call in the history of professional sports television. There's no way. There's no two ways about it. I didn't have him on my list because I was trying to be very specific about when we get to me, I try to do one slot for each sport to be fair, because I love all four North American sports. So I try to pick one great guy from each sport. Al Michaels is a jack of all trades. He could do football. He hadn't done a lot of baseball in the last like 20 years or so, but he did do World Series games and LCS games for ABC in the late 80s. But obviously, he's known more for football, particularly on NBC in the last, you know, what, 20 years, I guess, since NBC's been doing Sunday nights. But he definitely belongs there pretty much just for Do You Believe in Miracles, if anything else.
Yeah, and like World Series, he was going to be calling the earthquake game, right?
When
the
yes,
earthquake
he was.
Yep.
Tim McCarver was talking to Al when the highway collapsed. Yep.
Yeah. And only person to ever be traded for a cartoon character in history. I don't know. Do you guys know that story?
Yep. ABC, Bailey? ESPN cut the deal.
Yeah, because when NBC got the Sunday Night Football package, they wanted Al Michaels. He was under contract to ABC Disney. So Disney's like, we want the rights to Oswald the Unlucky Rabbit back that Walt had unfortunately sold like before he created Mickey, actually. So they traded the rights to Oswald the Unlucky Rabbit for Al Michaels. Quite nice little
huge win for NBC there. Just a crushing trade. That's like the who was it? The Red Sox traded Bagwell. Bagwell for like a back. That's like the Al Michaels for what's his name? Some kind of mouse or what? What did you say the cartoon was?
It was Oswald
the Unlucky
Rabbit. A jabroni cartoon.
The Larry Anderson of cartoons.
Yeah. I'm not going to turn this into a cartoon debate, but I mean, I think they made a decent amount of money in merchandising on Oswald. It was a very sought after character that they couldn't do anything with that people have been clamoring for, the big hardcore Disney animation nerds, and they do sell Oswald here. So I think, I mean, Al Michaels still made was like the best thing, you know, he made that it made a smooth transition for people like, okay, we're good. Move Networks, same guy, we're good. But yeah, I mean, no shade on Al though for that. That's all I'm saying. All right, Scott, give us your first pick.
Did Oswald make your list, Andy?
No, I will list.
I know you really kind of went in on that, huh?
Well, big Oswald defender.
I'm an animation nerd. You guys know that. Yeah. So I do host a Disney show. All right, Scott. Can you hear me? Did we lose you?
Scott's falling off.
Scott, you're on mute. No, that's John.
Yeah, got me now? Oh, my
there he is. There he is.
I don't know what happened there. All right. So what I was saying was I was a little very diplomatic with my play-by-play. I wanted one great guy from each sport. It's a little different when I do the color guys because the color guys on a national stage, they're much more focused in one sport particularly. But so since we all did baseball at the moment for the most part, I'll go with my baseball guy. And this guy is in the era of Jack Buck and Kirk Gowdy. This is the guy who narrated my World Series. In Johnny's World Series, you can't talk about amazing all-time play-by-play guys without saying Vin Scully. He could read me the phone book. It's interesting to note that Noah did not like the arc to be that shape. During the regular year, it was shaped that. Like, he could read the Bible. It doesn't matter. That's how great Vin Scully is. He was all-time, obviously, Dodger guy, but he was probably one of the best national guys of all time. He did football, too. He did, I think he did the catch, as a matter of fact. I think he did the Cowboy Niner 81 NFC Championship. So he's done his share of football, too, but obviously baseball is his thing. And it's Vin Scully. There's really nothing else to say.
Well, he made Steve's list as well. Steve, talk about Vin Scully.
I mean, Vin Scully would be the first person I put up there. You know, one great thing about technology, the last however many years of his career, I would subscribe every year to the MLB radio app so you could listen to any team's radio broadcast. And the Dodgers would play, you know, 10:30 on the East Coast. So when I would lay down in bed, I would just put the Dodgers game on just because it's just like I didn't care about the game. I'm not a Dodgers fan. I just wanted to listen to Vin Scully talk about whatever the hell he was talking about. Like Scott said, it could be Noah's Ark or whatever. I think he's the best of all time to do it. And it's so hard to, you know, do something like that by himself. And he did it by himself for 50 years. And never once did anyone say, hey, you should get a color guy in there. He didn't need one. He's that good. So he'd be my first name. If we, if Andy called and said we changed the rules, you can only pick one guy, that'd be the guy I pick.
All right. Cowboy had him as well. Give us some on your, some of your,
I mean, I think these guys said it. I'm not, I mean, it's a credit to him. I'm not the biggest baseball fan in the world, and he would be my number one guy as well. Just kind of the gold standard when you think about play-by-play guys.
All right. Johnny, any thoughts to add on Vince Scully that hasn't been said?
Behind the bag, it gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win.
What a piece of shit.
All right, Johnny, you're up again, my friend.
Are we doing that color or the...
No, we're still in PvP.
Okay, second choice. Okay, Marv Albert from the NBA. Yes! And another voice I grew up with my Knicks, and then he moved on to big and better things, because if he stood with the Knicks, he wouldn't have done too many playoff championship games. So right. He turned into the number one basketball announcer.
Believe it or not, your This Week in NFL, This Week in Sports co-host also had him on his list, the Cowboy, Roger. Talk about Marv Albert.
Great call, John. I mean,
a blind squirrel finds two nuts today. Hey.
All kidding aside, you know, a huge NBA fan, and I love Marv. His voice to me signifies that he kind of takes the game up a notch. And like you said, John, started with the Knicks, and then obviously called all sorts of NBA finals games throughout my, you know, throughout my youth and young adulthood into my adulthood. And just when I think NBA announcer, I think Marv Albert. So great call, John.
All right. Steve had him as an honorable mention.
So. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of him. And I'm also a huge Howard Stern fan. I pretty much listened to Howard every day of my life since 1993 or something. And when he got in trouble for nibbling on the stewardess or sniffing her panties or whatever, I mean, it's one of the greatest just pieces of ammunition for Howard and Billy West at the time and Jackie. Just unbelievable. And I'm actually pretty good friends with Kenny Albert as well. And I was listening to a show one day, and they started talking about Kenny. And I was like, oh, I should send this to him, because he was going to do the announcing for a boxing match they had between Stuttering John and Angry Black. And he ended up pulling out because his dad was in the news. And I wrote to him and I said, hey, I want to send you this clip, but I want to make sure first that you know that they talk about you for 5 minutes, and then it's 20 minutes of just absolute ripping on your father. So I want to make sure it's cool before I send it. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, send it. I'd love to listen to that. So he was all about it. But, yeah, I mean, Marv, come on. Great at hockey, too. I wish he did hockey more. Because he's another guy who, you know, is great at hockey, but basketball sucked him up, took him over.
All right. Scott, good call of
the 94 Rangers championship. Gets overshadowed by Rosen's great call, but Marv had a great call on the 94 Rangers, too.
All right. Very good. Scott, anything to add?
Yeah, again, Marv, a guy I grew up with around our area. You know, did a lot of, you know, NBA in the on NBC in the 90s. I almost find him the voice of Michael, because he did, you know, a ton of the big games during the Bulls runs. And but I agree with Johnny. He's the voice of the, he's almost the voice of the Garden for so many years. So yeah, no, Marv definitely.
All right, Steve, your next pick.
All right, my next pick is Howard Cosell. Right, another one that I couldn't not have him on. Not necessarily from my era as much, but, you know, I remember, I think it was the 20th or 25th anniversary of Sports Illustrated, buying the commemorative issue, and on the cover was Cosell and Muhammad Ali. And I remember just reading that as like a 9 or 10-year-old and learning all about Cosell and his relationship with Ali. Then, of course, he's Monday Night Football. He was the one who told the country that John Lennon had been shot during a Patriots game as they were lining up to kick a field goal. But he's almost like an innovator in terms of a national play-by-play guy and what that means. He also kind of went play-by-play to color. He could do both. But he kind of did more color later in his career. But, yeah, Cosell, easy pick for me. Had him written down before I thought about it.
All right. You made Roger's list as well. Roger, Howard Cosell.
Yep, that was my fourth pick. And I'm a huge boxing person, and have been pretty much my whole life. And just his stuff with Ali is just, again, iconic. And he just had that real one of a kind voice where I mean, you knew it was him, and it made the moment that much bigger. And you think about some of those legendary calls, and I mean, he makes them right. He makes those moments even more big than they were at the time. And then obviously the Monday Night Football, like Steve said. So yeah, he was a pretty easy call for me as well.
All right. Scott, anything to add?
I'll be honest. He was not my cup of tea. I think a lot of times he didn't know as much about what he did know. He let you know. What he didn't know, he hid. So I will give him that. He was good at playing the shell game when he didn't know what he was talking about, which was probably a decent amount of the time. Sadly, I know more about him behind the scenes, so I don't want to sully that, particularly when he was working in radio at ABC. But I can understand people's opinions of him, but he was not on my list.
Johnny, anything to add?
No, sir.
All right, very good. All right, Scott, give us your next pick. Roger's all right, list is all done.
well, since we're talking, we got into hoops. I'll do my hoop guy, and obviously, a lot of people would expect me to say Chick Hearn, but honestly, I haven't listened to a lot of Chick Hearn because I don't get, you know, I can't get KCAL, which is, I think, the Laker radio team. I mean, I've heard some Chick at times, but. From a national perspective, and here's another guy that I think gets forgotten, but he's done another guy that's done a ton of great sports. But I put Dick Stockton on my list, on my Mount Rushmore. He's the voice for me of the NBA Finals when I was a kid. And, you know, I know Roger's a little younger than me, but he was Roger, Lakers, Celtics in the 80s. I mean, him and his color commentator, who I'm actually going to have in the color commentator, Mount Rushmore, they told the story like nobody else. And all of the great times in the 80s when the NBA was on CBS, Dick Stockton did the big games. He does his baseball is not bad. He does pretty good football. But to me, he's like the preeminent national NBA guy for me. So I had Dick Stockton on my list.
Yeah, that's a good one, Scott. And I am younger, but senior was my dad. So I remember watching all the Lakers Celtics finals when I was 5, 6, and 7 years old. I remember it like it was yesterday. So I'm with you.
Yeah. Man.
Anybody else have any thoughts on Dick Stockton?
Yeah.
It's a great pick.
I like Dick.
Thanks, John.
Yeah.
That's going in the new open. All right. Back around the horn to Johnny. Finish off your list.
Oh, Nelly, let me tell you about Keith Jackson.
Oh.
Another one. College football, every time you knew it was a big game when you heard that Keith Jackson voice, that distinct voice, maybe a little southern drawl, a little high pitch, but just beautiful. College football made NCAA what it is.
All right. Anybody, he didn't make anybody else's list, but anybody else have any thoughts to add on Keith Jackson?
John, go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, I wish we could have like nine Heismans. Speaking of college football, nine Mount Rushmores, because, he's the voice of college football for the last, 40 years. And for me, New Year's Day when he said the Purple Mountains of Pasadena, for every Rose Bowl, whether it was USC, Michigan, USC, Ohio State, those fucking scumbags at USC against somebody, doesn't matter. He did the game. And it was him and whoever at color. So Keith Jackson is the voice of Nebraska, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Michigan, Texas, the Tyler Rose of Texas, Earl Campbell. Yeah, just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, sorry, Roger. Actually, he was an honorable mention of yours.
An honorable mention, John. So you and I are kind of really on the same wavelength here today, which is unusual. So hopefully we can veer off that for the color commentators so that we can actually have an interesting show instead of just agreeing with each other.
I don't call this interesting.
Yes, you did too. Steve. You had a lot of elements.
I know I did. Yeah, I had a lot. I had him on there as well. I think if I was able to build two Mount Rushmores, he'd be the first face on the second one. I felt a responsibility. I felt the responsibility to get a hockey guy on. That's kind of why he didn't make my list. I felt like I wanted to put a voice of hockey on there, but he would be the first one on my next one. And yeah, I mean, unreal choice that I have no debate against for sure.
All right. Steve, give us your final.
Like I said, I wanted to put a hockey guy on. And the thing about this guy, I said I wanted, you know, someone who represented a national voice. And this guy's different because he was for a whole, like, he was the voice for the whole country. You know, this is the guy, he was the number one play-by-play guy for hockey in Canada for 50 years. You know, he was the CBC number one guy calling hockey in Canada. And his name is Bob Cole, and he just retired last year or two. And just an all-time great, understated guy, sort of like in the style of Pat Summerall. You know, and living in Buffalo, we got CBC over the air here growing up. So I've been watching Hockey Night in Canada since I was 3 years old. And his was always the voice calling that first game. And anything in Maple Leaf Gardens, you know. And he would just sort of say, you know, goal. And then he was so good at just getting out of the way and letting the intense crowds and the Hockey Canada crowds just take over. You know, he's the guy who called the Mario Lemieux goal in the 87 Canada Cup on the assist from Gretzky over the Russians. You know, the line in the Tragically Hip song, if there's a goal that everyone remembers, it was back in old 72. He's the one who called that call again against the Russians, you know, and was there to call there when they finally won the gold medal again in Vancouver, or Salt Lake, I guess, was the first one. So I'm not a Canadian, but I love Bob Cole and what he's meant to hockey. He's the number one hockey play-by-play guy, period. And I just wanted to make sure he was on a list, so I gave him a spot.
Very good. Anybody else have to anything to add about Bob Cole?
No. I know of him. I've never listened to him, but I know who he is, and he definitely is the voice of the CBC. So I agree with him on that.
All and you see the highlight. Like anyone who, you know, if you went and watched a highlight, you go, okay, I know that voice. You know, one of those kind of guys.
All right, Scott, you're the only one has any picks left, and you have two. So give us your first one out of them, the last ones.
Okay. All right. Well, you've heard my baseball guy, and you've heard my basketball guy. So I'm going to do my football guy now, and Steve just mentioned him. He, you know, growing up in an NFC house as a kid and growing up in a, and Johnny can understand this, in a a house full of Giant fans, and CBS was always on in my house. So I can't not have a Mount Rushmore of play-by-play guys without having Pat Summerall. He's the greatest football play-by-play guy of all time. He's reserved. He knew the game. He let his color guys, whether it was John or Tom Brookshire, get their point out. He didn't talk too much. You know, he'd give a joke here and there. You probably heard some, you know, ice clanging in a glass probably at times, but he to me is my childhood when it comes to play by play football, because again, with a father and two brothers that were Giant fans, and you know, he did plenty of Cowboy games, Niner games. You know, he always either did the Giants at 1 o'clock or the more important game at 4 o'clock. So he was on every Sunday, and he was my childhood with watching NFL football. So I couldn't not have Pat Summerall on there.
Steve, he was an honorable mention of yours.
And another guy who'd be on my second one, you know, Jackson Summerall would be where I start with that one. And to me, he was the voice of, he always let me know the weekend was over, right? The 4 o'clock CBS game. And then he'd read the coming up after the game, 60 minutes. That's when I knew, oh, shit, the weekend's over. Got to finish my homework. It's going to be bedtime and back to school. So maybe that's why I kept him off my top four, just because he's always pulling the plug on the weekend. But an unbelievable play-by-play guy, you know, an all-time great.
Followed by murder.
Followed by Murder, She Wrote. Yep.
And John, he also did the Masters, and he also did U.S. Open tennis. So he wasn't just a football guy either.
John, do you have anything to add about Pat Summerall?
No, he would make an honorable mention for me. Definitely. Great, solid voice growing up.
Roger?
They're not totally my cup of tea. I always thought he was a little dry, but I kind of, you know, Madden carried him a little bit, but I thought he was good.
All right, Scott, take us home on your last pick.
All right. Well, my last pick is a hockey guy, and it's kind of like the same as Bob Cole, except maybe more U.S. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but to me, he's like the guy that does all the big hockey games, whether it's Stanley Cup playoffs, All-Star game, Cup finals, and that's Doc Emrick. I know a lot of people. I also like Jigs McDonald. Jigs always did the Olympics, but Doc Emrick, whether it's the Garden, the Meadowlands, Boston, you know, the Fleet Center, whatever different names the Bruins played in, or, you know, the Forum in Montreal, Maple Leaf Gardens, the Joe, you know, he's there for every huge moment. The only other guy that I would give honorable mention to for hockey would be, of course, his name just escaped my head. He does the Orioles.
Gary Thorne.
Gary Thorne. Thank you, Steve. Because Gary Thorne actually had the one hockey call that actually made me cry. And it actually wasn't when the Bruins won it in 2011, but it was 10 years earlier when Joe Sakic handed the cup to Ray Bourque. And that actually made me cry. So Gary Thorne will always have a special place in my heart. Plus, he did Johnny's and My Mets in the 80s, too, with Ralph and those guys. So, but Doc Emrick is my hockey guy. He does every big game on NBC, whether it's the Cup Finals, Easter Cup, didn't matter. It's Doc, and used to be JD, and now it's different guys, Eddie Olczyk and all sorts of different guys. But to me, he's the voice of hockey in America.
Anybody have anything to add on Doc Emrick?
I would just say I just liked Gary Thorne better, I guess. And to me, Doc Emrick, in a way, represented the fact that Gary Thorne's not calling these games anymore because ESPN lost the contract. Yeah. Doc Emrick is a beautiful, eloquent speaker and a very, very good play-by-play man. Just not my favorite, I guess. I just like Gary Thorne. You know, there's something about the intensity. When I think of Gary Thorne, his number one call to me is the Steve Yzerman double OT game 7 winner to eliminate Gretzky and the Blues, just like in the Joe Louis Arena, and just a great job making the call and then bailing out. But I just like Thorne better, but yeah, nothing wrong with Doc Emrick, who did 50 years of incredible work and just retired. And again, all these guys, everyone we've named, they're all legends. And probably anyone we name on our honorable mention, they're going to be legends too, with all the sports we watch in this country. And for as long as we've been watching them on TV now, this is almost unfair to name four. I could build 4 Mount Rushmores and feel comfortable that everyone deserved a spot on there. Mm.
All right. Honorable mentions. Cowboy, you got any?
Oh, yep. The one that I did that we didn't talk about was kind of a homer pick, but it was Johnny Most. For the Celtics radio guy forever. You probably know him from Bird. Mm-hmm. Bird stole the ball. Yep. And I'll save some. I have some other homer picks coming up, so I'll save it a little bit. But just an iconic guy for me and my household.
Steve, you had a bunch, and you want to run them through them?
The ones that haven't been mentioned yet. Bob Costas, I had. The thing is, kind of, as far as play-by-play, mostly just baseball. So I kind of figured I'll save him for if we ever do a studio guy show. Jim Nance. Jim Nance is the voice of the Masters and the NFL for a long time. Called the Saints Super Bowl. Super Bowl 44, he was the voice of that. You know, gets by Manning. Will always be something that rings in my head. Rick Jenneret was my homework pick. The guy who's called Sabres Hockey for the last however many years. I'm sure you've heard his Mayday call. Scott, I know you know that one against the Bruins, and the Sabres swept the Bruins. I had Brett Musburger. I'm surprised he wasn't mentioned a little bit. You are looking live. Like, that's the way to start a big game for sure. And I also have who I think is the number one play-by-play guy on TV right now. And when he retires, he'll have reserved a spot on the play-by-play Mount Rushmore next to his father, and that's Joe Buck. A great, great man, too. So,
Johnny, anybody that you wanted to just quickly mention before we
go to break? No, they got him. They got him covered. Thanks.
All right, Scott.
I just one quick thing about Brent. To me, Brent's always been a studio guy. He'll always be the host of the NFL Today for me.
Sure.
He does do good play-by-play. He's done some good college games. But I didn't put him on mine because to me, he'll always be the host of the NFL Today. But that's
fair. Yep, that's fair.
All right, very good. So we're going to go to the other chair in a moment. Talk about those color commentators, the guys that add, you know, those facts. They back up the play-by-play guy. So we'll be back in just a moment with Steve Bennett, Roger Morissette, Scott Criscola, and J.R. Sir Neil D'Amato here on Making Mount Rushmore. Stick around. Police Mission Pop Experience. Welcome back to Making Mount Rushmore, episode 13. It's a sports-themed episode talking about the guys in the booth, the guys that you hear the voices of. They call your plays. They give you the information. They analyze all that kind of great stuff. We did the play-by-play guys. Now we're going to the color commentators, and we are starting off this half of the show with the Podfather, Scott Criscola. Scott, give us your first color commentator, Mount Rushmore pick.
This is a cake one. He was so good, a video game franchise is named after him. Obviously, we have to start with John Madden. He was a great transition for Pat Summerall when Tom Brookshire became a play-by-play guy for his own broadcast team. And I remember the first Super Bowl that I really remember as a kid was Bengals Niners Super Bowl 16 at the Silverdome, and I remember Pat and John. And again, from that point forward, Pat and John were Sunday afternoon. We talked about Brent Musburger earlier. Brent and got my day started with the NFL Today, and then Pat and John did the 1 o'clock Giants game. And if NBC did the doubleheader, then I would move on. But if the Giants are playing some scrub, then usually Pat and John would do the 4 o'clock game somewhere like, you know, San Francisco or Dallas or Anaheim or something. But John made it exciting. He wasn't always the boom, boom and, you know, the outback bus and all that stuff. When he first started, he was very uncomfortable, but he just knew his football. And I think that's a part of it that always gets forgotten. Yeah, he's a personality and he's a character, but the guy knows his football. And, you know, he did have to deal with Al Davis. So that can't be forgotten too. But I think John Madden's right out of the gate.
All right. Roger, made your list.
Yeah. Yep. Real obvious one. Huge, as you know, Andy, I'm a big player of the video game. Right? But no, in all seriousness, he was the, I think out of both Rushmores, he was the most obvious choice to me out of both Rushmores. I would be shocked if he's not on everybody's color commentator list. I think Scott said it well, that he had some comedic value, but he really knew his shit and he got you into the game. And, you know, some of the comedy stuff's very funny. And I always think of the freaking Thanksgiving Day games with the turkey legs. That's all I always remember about
the turducken.
Exactly.
Turducken, so, yeah.
So, I mean, to me, far and away, number one color commentator of all time across sports.
Well, he was on Steve's list as well.
He transcended the job. I mean, he took the job to a completely different stratosphere. He made the people doing the job stars. I mean, Tony Romo signed a $17 million contract to do this job. It's not getting $17 million without the hard work and the road that was paved by John Madden. You know, Scott, you said he was on your first Super Bowl. My first Super Bowl was 20, which was Enberg and Olsen. And we should have mentioned, someone should have mentioned Dick Enberg on the last half. But he was on my second one, Super Bowl 21. So, like I said, he transcended it. He changed the game. He made it something different. He turned the job into someone working with the play-by-play guy to the star working with the play-by-play guy. So,
did you guys get together before the show and decide to bring up all the worst moments in Boston sports history, or did it just kind of work out that way?
Super Bowl 20. Yeah.
We got Buckner. Super Bowl 20.
Mayday.
Super Bowl 20 is one of my first memories. I remember being so pumped when Walter Payton fumbled, and then just crying myself to sleep that night. It was traumatized me.
Yeah, Roger. Then since those moments, you have 6 Super Bowls and 3 World Series. So just shut up, will you?
That's true. It's been an
advantage.
Yes. I can't lie.
All right. Well, it was a clean sweep. Johnny had him as well.
Yeah. My favorite Madden moment of all time was, I think it was in the winter. I think it was like Chicago, and they span to the crowd, and there was a few fat slobs, breathing the weather with no, they had no shirts on. So some rogue goes like, "Oh, look at those guys, Johnny. Look at those sick guys. Those are your kind of people, right?" And Madden goes, "No, those guys are idiots. They're gonna die from hypothermia." And he looks at the crowd, he's like, "Those aren't my kind of people. Those guys are idiots."
All right, Roger, give us another pick from your list.
Yep, so we'll go from one that I know was on everybody's list to I would venture to guess that I'm the only person that took this person. So I'm a big combat sports fan, right? And so Joe Rogan I put on my Mount Rushmore for color commentators. He's been the color guy for the UFC for going to be the last 15 years or so, as that promotion kind of went from this sideshow freak thing to the behemoth that it is today. And if you're a fan and you watch, Joe is extremely, extremely passionate and extremely knowledgeable about the sport. And he, it's very similar to Romo, where during a football game, one of the things people love about Romo is that he tells you kind of what's going to happen before it happens, because he just sees it differently, right? And Joe is the same way. When these guys are on the ground, doing their jiu-jitsu, like Joe will say, okay, well, he's going to move his right leg here, and he's going to slip the arm under, and if that happens, this thing's over, and it happens. And I just think he's very entertaining, and he's somebody who is wildly successful from his podcast, doesn't need to do the UFC at all anymore, and really just does it because he loves it. And he only does the big pay-per-view events now. So kind of similar to some of the other guys we've talked about, when Joe's on, it's a big fight, and it gives that big fight feel. So I think he's fantastic, and that's why he's on my list.
All right. Anybody have anything to add about Joe Rogan?
I think what I love about him is he's uncancelable in the era of cancellations, right? I just love the way that he stands up for what he thinks, whether it's on his podcast or calling a UFC fight. I really feel like he's just a guy that pisses a lot of people off because they can't cancel him. And I love that about him.
Well, he's a champion. I mean, outside of the UFC, outside of being a color commentator, I agree, Steve. He's a champion for free thought. It's really in a world where there's not a whole lot of that sometimes. So,
all right. Very good. All right, Steve, give us an entry on your list.
Okay, I will go with baseball guy. And again, it's along the lines of just when I heard his voice, I knew it was big time. And that's Tim McCarver. I think that my favorite thing, though, is Deion Sanders dumping ice on him. And his response of, "You're a big man, Deion, you're a big man." He's great. I mean, he's great, and he taught me a lot about nuance. He taught me the nuance of baseball. Why you might walk a guy here, why you might, I didn't play baseball really outside of some little league shit. So I knew the game at a superficial level until I started really paying attention to people like Tim McCarver, who taught me the game, why it's a walk, why you do a double switch, why this might happen. Really great with the strategy of it. And also work with many partners, early days, CBS, him with Sean McDonough, or, obviously into the twilight of his career with the great Joe Buck. So, Tim McCarver, he just taught me a shit ton about baseball. And that's kind of what the job's there for.
All right. He did not make anybody's list, but if anybody has anything they want to add about Tim McCarver, Johnny, Scott, you got anything to add about Tim McCarver?
a rare guy that did both the Yankees and the Mets. You don't see that very often. Tom Seaver was, I think, the other. But McCarver did both the Mets and the Yankees different times.
All right. Very good. All right, Johnny, give us an entry on your list.
I had a Madden 2.
Yeah, we know. Give us another one now.
You want another one? You're asking for a lot here, but
I tell you, like blood from a stone here. Jesus.
Got to get one Paisan, Dick Vitale from college basketball. Nobody liked Dickie V. He made so many phrases famous. Primetime player. And just the PTB or
diaper dandies.
Yeah, diaper dandies. Yeah. So Dickie B, baby. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis Miller did a really funny routine once. As could you imagine if it was Dick Vitale giving the Ten Commandments instead of Moses? These are commandments, not suggestions, baby.
Dennis Miller, Andy, is that?
Is he on your list?
Yeah. No, he did not make my list. No. Unfortunately.
right next to Tony Kornheiser.
And Oswald the Bunny.
Oswald the Unlucky Rabbit. You're going to insult me, you do it right.
I was close. John, I think that's a great... You know, I know we like to joke and make fun of each other's picks, but you can't argue with Dickie V. Argue with Dickie V. Golden age of college basketball. He's really probably... in a lot of ways, the face of it. And also, I read his book when I was, 9 years old, which was really good. So it talked about him being a coach. I think it was at Detroit Mercy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And really, and it seems it's a good man too.
Yep. Scott, anything you want to add?
I always thought that he, rode Krzyzewski's jock too much, but for the most part, he definitely was always up for the big games, he's the a good color guy can be loved and hated at the same time. At least you're paid attention to. One thing you don't want to be is ignored. So you either want to be loved or hated. Same thing with Cosell. But Dickie V's good. Again, I think he rode I don't think he knew much about mid majors, or ask him something about, Patriot League and he'd stare at you. But God forbid anybody on Tobacco Road, and we're riding that. But I think that was all part of the. I thought that was all part of the gimmick, he's still, he's in that.
All right, Steve, anything to add?
Great tournament, Sorry.
But you're done. All right, sorry, Les.
No, I just say I admire his passion for the game. Right, he never felt like he didn't want to be there. He certainly brought energy and excitement to a sport that I find completely boring. So a lot of excitement. So. He'd be my top basketball guy if I had to have one.
All right. Back to you, Scott. Give us another one of your picks.
Well, this one I put on here because, again, he reminds me of my childhood. And this is funny because he was the color guy for the team that I hated as a kid. But he just knew – he knew basketball. So I'm actually going to give – Roger's going to faint. Make sure you tell Senior I said this too. I got to put Tommy Heinsohn on here. The guy knows his football. He wasn't as rah-rah-y in the 80s when he did the finals with Dick Stockton. But one thing I loved about Tom Heinsohn, yes, we all know that it bled green and white, but you could tell that he had a respect for the Lakers, and he didn't let his, not wanting them to win get in the way. He threw shade at Celtics when they needed to be. I never thought he could, but he did. And again, he was a guy who I remember from my childhood, as being there for the big game. So I'm sure that not when maybe Roger has him. I doubt anyone else does. But I got to put Tommy Heinsohn on there.
Well, Roger does have him. Roger, give your thoughts.
I do have him, and I appreciate you putting him on the list, Scott. The reasoning. Because he liked the Lakers and stuff like that. Not good. You're killing me. You're killing me with that. But
the truth.
I mean, he passed away this year, and I'm you know, I mean, I bleed green, right? I mean, as much of a, you know, as a hockey fan as Steve is, right? I mean, I'm the same way with the basketball and with the Celtics. And you could say that he respected the Lakers, but he was the biggest fucking homer in the history of color commentators. This guy, I mean, when it is like early 80s, is this a couple of years ago when it had to be restrained from going after the refs after a game. But he's my personal favorite guy to listen to do a game, period. Just in taking away, like, you know, national whatever, right? He's my personal favorite guy. And it's because, I mean, he really was the Boston Celtics. And he would, I mean, especially as he got older, would sit in that chair and just root for the Celtics the whole game. Yep. And he had his guys, right? Like the one everyone knows, right, is Walter. I love Walter McCarty, right? He loves Walter. He would give the Tommy points to the guys who hustled. And I mean, I'm really going to miss him. Like, honestly, it was like when he passed away, it was like a member of my family passed away. And I can't believe that he made your list too, Scott. I thought for sure I would be the only person who had him. But I think it's a testament to him that he made a diehard Lakers fans list. And I thank you for it.
Of course.
All right. So moving on to Steve again. Steve, give us another entry on yours.
Okay, well, not all that different than my last one with Tim McCarver. Kind of the same reasons, same idea. Joe Morgan, kind of the voice of baseball on ESPN, I feel like, and also the now-defunct Baseball Network called a lot of big games with Bob Costas, including Game 6 of the 95 World Series, Braves and Indians, and called Costas called the Dave Justice home run, and Joe Morgan explained why he hit it, and again, I think even more so than McCarver, this guy taught me baseball. And, you know, I watched him for years and years and years do it. And I never was disappointed with the job he did. So he was another kind of easy pick for me.
He was an honorable mention of Rogers.
Yep, all the reasons you said, Steve. Great player, probably an even better announcer.
Yeah, Hall of Fame and just player,
extremely, extremely, I think you said it best, very, very knowledgeable and definitely not an overpowering personality, which is, I think, good a lot of times with baseball. And there's a lot of time to fill there, and he would fill it well. So just perfect pick.
Yeah. Scott, anything to add on Joe Morgan?
Oh, not at all. Him and John Miller, tremendous Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN.
Yeah, that was the team.
Yeah, they were fantastic. I love John Miller. There's a guy that could be on multiple Mount Rushmores too. But yeah, no, I'm not gonna problem with Joe Morgan. Knows another guy knows his baseball. He's a rah-rah guy because you could always hear it in his voice that he hated saying nice things about the Yankees in the late '90s because they always thought that they were needling his big red machine. But that's the point of color guys. Color guys are allowed to be that way. Play-by-play guys can't. But color guys can show a little something because that's the entertainment value of it. So,
and I mean, if you're gonna not like somebody, I mean, the Yankees are fine.
Anyway, but at least no Yankee teammates were banned for life from baseball. I don't know. Nah, but I don't know. I can't believe I'm defending the Yankees. What am I doing? I think I'm drinking.
Look, you all right?
The fuck is in my glass here? Steve, that's a great pick. Joe Morgan's fantastic. Because in the grand scheme of things, these guys need to know the sport, and Joe Morgan definitely knows the sport. So,
knows how to
teach it too. Knows how to take what he knows and put it in words. Like Eddie Van Halen's son Wolfie is talking about how his dad was a shitty teacher because he would teach guitar like he was Eddie Van Halen. He'd say just do this, and he'd say no, you can't. That's like, I think with announcers sometimes who played, they talk about it like world-class players, you know, but Joe Morgan was good at decoding the jargon and making it something that you could understand. And then he brought you up a level and then, you know, so then he would bring you up with them and then later he'd hit you at a higher level and you could take it because he coached you up, talked you up. So,
right.
All right. Johnny, give us your pick.
Okay. Tony Kubek. A lot of things that Steve said about how Morgan was, you know, helped him understand baseball as he was growing up. That's what Tony Kubek was to me. explaining the importance of statistics and advantages of left-handed hitters and strategy stuff that you pick up at a young age. So Tony Kubek was the voice. And also went on after NBC, after doing the games of the week, he went on to, with the Yankees and was well respected there when he did their games.
All right. Anybody have any, Scott, you have anything to add on Tony Kubek?
Oh, no, I everything Johnny said. When I was a kid, it was always Bob Costas. When it was NBC weekends baseball, it was always Bob Costas and Tony Kubek did the AL games.
Yep.
Vin Scully. And another guy who I won't mention yet because he's on my Mount Rushmore did color. Tony Kubek. And again, if you lived in this part of the country and you had MSG or Channel 11 or whatever, Tony Kubek would do the Yankees too. But another guy like Joe Morgan who could talk to you like a regular person about a play or how to cover second, how to slide step the base and sing things like that without talking over your head. I agree on that, definitely.
All right. Anybody else have anything to add on Tony Kubek?
Great pick.
All right. Scott, back around to you. Give us another one of yours.
All right. Well, I might as well mention the guy that I'm referring to with Vin Scully. And I thought he was an awful play-by-play guy. But here was a guy who was out of his element. And then when he did color, I thought he was fantastic. And that's Joe Garagiola. Joe was not a good player. Like, if you go back to, like, he did play-by-play in the late 70s to, like, maybe 82 or 83. Not very good. He was a storyteller kind of guy. He was better suited for color than for play-by-play. And then when he hooked up with Vin, it was pure gold. And he's a guy, another guy who, could explain the game at a level that a viewer could understand. That's one thing I would say about John's and my two guys right now, Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez. You could tell Keith would not be a very good coach because he has no patience for anybody. But Ronnie, I think, would be a great pitching coach. And I always said that about Joe Garagiola. I think he would have been a good scout and a good coach for teams. He understood the game, said it in a very kind of fatherly way, and him and Vin Scully were perfect together.
Yeah. All right. Anybody have anything to add on Joe Garagiola?
Well said, Scott.
All right. Roger, let's finish off your Mount Rushmore.
Yep, the last guy on my list is a college basketball guy, the governor, Bill Raftery. I was
onions
had it razor thin with him and Dickie V, and I went with Raftery. I think Dickie V is probably a stronger personality, but strictly as a color guy during the game, I prefer the governor, and he did a lot of the biggest games, and I think he does a great job of having that excitement. And I think for a college basketball game, especially like NCAA tournament, right, you need that kind of excitement because a lot of people watching aren't going to know everybody in the game, of course, and you have people who just watch those games. But he combined that with a strong knowledge of the game, and I just love listening to him.
Anybody else have anything to add on that pick?
Yeah, I would just say as a non-basketball guy, but someone who does really enjoy the NCAA tournament, he's really he's a big voice of that. And, I always love to hear him call those games, he's great, whether it was Big Monday or the NCAA tournament or whatever the case is. Definitely my favorite. It's kind of a non-basketball guy, my favorite. And again, someone who, as a non-basketball guy, who just gets so frustrated by fucking fouls and what is and isn't one makes no goddamn sense. Everyone knows that. He's at least good at calming me down sometimes, explaining why, maybe this one isn't or that one is. But if I had to pick a basketball guy, that'd be the guy I'd pick.
Yeah. All right. Steve, finish off your list.
All right. My last guy on my list is the counterpart to my last guy on my play-by-play list. His name is Harry Neal, and he was the number one color guy in Canada for years and years and years, him and Bob Cole. And in Buffalo, we were lucky enough, after he retired from Hockey Night in Canada, he agreed, because of Rick Jenneret being a friend of his, to do a few years here. And I just wanted to read, he's like a character, like a real character. And like some of his quotes, kind of like a Yogi Bear type, like, I know my players don't like my practices, but that's okay because I don't like their games. is that a beard or is Niedermeyer eating a muskrat? Just like a ton of hilarious quotes like that. He had one when he was talking about coaching. He was a coach for the Vancouver Canucks. And he said, last season we couldn't win at home. This season we couldn't win on the road. My failure as a coach is that I can't think of anywhere else to play. The score wasn't indicative of our play. We were much worse than that. Just a character, said hilarious things, made up words, but loved the game of hockey. Like, kind of like Vital in the sense that you always felt his passion for hockey, that he loved it as much as you did and wanted to be there. And, you know, we were lucky in Buffalo to get a few years out of him. And they were what, a few years when the Sabres were really good. 1 year we won the President's Trophy when he was calling the games and with Rick. So, yeah, great. A true number one guy. Like, as Madden was to the United States in football, Harry Neal was to hockey in Canada.
All right, very good. So Johnny unfortunately had to make an Irish exit, I will read his last pick. He had Mark Jackson, basketball commentator, former player. I'm not a big basketball guy, so I don't really watch it on TV.
Mark Jackson's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mark Jackson, very good announcer.
Yeah, he's
the hell is an Irish accent.
Yeah, Steve Early.
He passed
the
out.
Fact that you have to ask, the fact that we all know we're trying to figure out where he went is an Irish exit. Trust me.
Okay.
I've seen all of
them. Oh, that's when you like sneak out, right? You, like,
exactly.
Yeah, okay. All right. I do know an Irish accent. I like doing that. We call it a dip. You dip out early like that. Like
exactly.
Dip out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Mark Jackson, St. John's kid, played for the Knicks. He's a fantastic color guy. So that good pick by Johnny on that one.
Yeah, good job, John. Good job by you.
Yeah, forget about it. All right, Scott, finish off your list.
All right, again, another guy. He's the NBC equivalent to John Madden in the 80s. You mentioned him, Steve. I didn't watch a ton of AFC, but like if in the 80s, if the Cowboys were playing like, you know, Denver or Cincinnati or something, I'd get to listen to both of them, and that's Merlin Olsen. Merlin Olsen knew the game of football. He was another guy who was very fatherly. He didn't talk down to you. He didn't scream. He called the play, and again, you don't get a lot of good linemen guys. They're usually quarterbacks, skill guys at color, but Merlin Olsen was a defensive lineman for one of the greatest defenses of all time, the fearsome foursome. And he knew how blocks are, how guys held, you know, because holding used to be that call you motherfucked, you know, every play. But he would explain, but if your arm is at this angle, it's not. But if you hook your arm here, it is. But trust me, I know, you know. And Merlin Olsen's a guy that wouldn't lie. So, just an amazing guy. He worked so well with Dick Enberg, who does belong on a play-by-play Mount Rushmore. You're absolutely right, Steve. And, again, he was the NBC equivalent to John Madden in the 80s and early 90s.
He called a lot of the big Bills games, you know, when the Bills went on that run. You know, he was a voice of those games, was on a lot of those. So, yeah, great pick. Yep. Him and I'm disappointed I didn't have Enberg at least as a honorable mention.
Me too. I know. I should have too.
All right. Roger, have anything to add on Merlin Olsen?
No, it's a good pick. That's a good pick. Him and Deardorff, two best linemen.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So Roger, we're up to honorable mentions. Why don't you give us any ones that you had that we didn't talk about?
Yeah, I mean the only one that we haven't talked about was Tony Romo, and he just hasn't been doing it long enough to to make it on the list. But I mean, I think at his current trajectory, if we did this list 10 years from now, he probably would be on there. Just a real seamless transition from quarterback to the booth. And it's funny because not everybody can do it, right? I think Tiki Barber was a guy who everybody thought was going to, you know, be the perfect guy to make that transition. It didn't happen, but Romo's just a natural in there. I mean, I actually think he probably could have kept playing, but it was so good and makes the $17 million a year that Steve mentioned earlier, that, you know, why take the hits, right? So I think he's fantastic, and for the reasons I mentioned earlier, and I think it's obvious to, you know, as football fan, he sees the game differently, and he not just sees it differently, but it's something that Steven Scott mentioned earlier, where he can see it and boil it down so that anybody sitting there watching can understand it. And the prediction stuff is wild, where they're gonna hit the, you know, he's gonna check to the slant on this one. Yep, there it is. he's great.
Yeah, Steve had him as one of his honorable mentions.
Well, he's another guy who's just gonna change the game, and watch the next 2-3 years, the impact that his contract is gonna have on sports media. You know, Jim Nance is gonna be the first domino to fall. He's up right now. Is CBS gonna pay $17 million for Nance? And if they don't, who will? And after Nance, whatever he makes, Joe Buck is the next year. So his contract and his influence is going to change sports media as much as anyone in the last 25 years, probably since Madden. And like Cowboy said, he's great at it. I mean, he's legitimately great at it. Everyone wants to now hire the next Tony Romo, right? Is it going to be Breeze? Is it going to be Phil Rivers? It's kind of like in coaching when the Rams went to the Super Bowl after they cheated. It was like not everyone wanted McVay, the next McVay, but not everyone can be as great. He makes it look so easy that everyone thinks they're just going to hire the next guy off the field, but it's not that easy.
Yeah,
Scott, he's just that good.
Yeah, he was the quarterback of your team. You have anything to add?
I think he's very good. Nance right now has two exceptional play-by-play guys that he works with in the span of a year, and this is for a guy who works for CBS. So he has Tony Romo during football season and Nick Faldo during the rest of the season, during the rest of the calendar year. Two tremendous guys who know their games well. I may even would have put Nick Faldo as a honorable mention, because I don't think anybody, any ex-golfer, can explain the game right now better than he can. So I just want to throw that in as one of my honorable mentions. But I like Tony. He's exciting. Yeah. Sometimes he's exciting when he doesn't have to be. I think he kind of hits the button. He's kind of like Gus Johnson. I think he hits the button one too many times. But no, he knows his football.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was out of the gate so good. I mean, I was surprised, you know, because, I mean, I don't follow it as closely as, like, you guys may. I mean, I watch for football. I watch for Giants. But I'm like, damn, he's good. Like you would expect a guy that just hung him up to be this good, and he is that good, which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Steve, I want to go through some of your honorable mentions.
Yeah, just real quick, I'll name some of the guys. Most of them are partners to guys on my play-by-play list, like Bill Clement, the longtime partner, Gary Thorne on hockey. You know, Chris Collinsworth, simply for all the big games he's called. He's not my favorite, but you can't deny his resume in terms of games he's called at this point. Eddie Olchek, the partner of Doc Emrick, who was on Scott's list. John Davidson, one of the all-time great
love JD
color guys for hockey, in the management role now, unfortunately. Gifford and Deardorff, who made the Monday Night Football team when I started watching it, of Michael Gifford and Deardorff. To me, that was, you knew it was the big, that I've been saying big games. To me, to be on Monday Night Football was like the biggest thing when I was a kid, because my team was never on it. So if the Saints got a Monday Night Football game in the 90s, to me it was like, holy shit. Plus, it was on at 9 o'clock. Like, it was literally on past my bedtime. So to be able to be up and stay up for it. And then I mentioned Vitale and some other guys who are, like, the best in their sport. John McEnroe. You know, if I'm watching tennis, I want him to be calling play-by-play color, because he's, again, like we've said, about being able to teach it. And Johnny Miller in golf. So I named some of the guys like that who were, you know, for their sport. If I'm watching that sport, I want them to be on. Maybe even Jeff Gordon in NASCAR. You know, if I'm watching it, because they have a way to. Michael Waltrip before him, or was it Daryl? Daryl, I guess, Waltrip, actually.
Daryl Waltrip.
Not Michael, my bad. Really good at just explaining those games. So that's why I had those guys on there.
All right. Scott, anybody that we didn't mention?
I mean, there's a ton of guys, ton of baseball guys. Obviously, locally, I mentioned them earlier. I love Ron Darling. I love Keith Hernandez on my, you know, on SNY. I love every, and I'm about to say this, Andy, I love a decent amount of the Yes color guys on that do the Yankees, mostly because I can't stand Michael Kay, so they all sound 10 times better anyway. You want to talk about a homer, Roger? How'd you not mention your boy Jerry Remy? You want to talk about homers? Good Lord.
The Rem Dog.
The Rem Dog. He's the He's the Homer of Homers.
He is. I'm not as big of a Rem Dog guy as some of the other Bostonites. I mean, he's fine.
Oh, man. I do have to say, too, my favorite, I want to do one more quick thing, and I'm going to go to hockey, Steve, here. When I was a kid, you know, now you got Jack Edwards and Shawnee there, but when I was a kid, Fred Cusick and Derek Sanderson doing the Bruin games on SBK was so fucking great. Just hearing Fred Cusick say Ray Bourque or Reggie Lemelin or Rick Middleton or Terry O'Reilly or Cam Neely or any of the great, great guys wearing the gold sweater. That was my childhood when it came to hockey, was Fred Cusick and Derek Sanderson. Again, Derek Sanderson, not sure if he was sober or not, but he was a hell of a color guy when he would do the Bruins games. He's another guy who didn't like going down Canal Street.
What is it with Boston guys and homers? I mean, Jack Edwards is probably the number one homer in hockey.
Yeah, he is.
Seems like, you know, the... Which, you know what, when it comes to local broadcasts, you want the guy to be a homer, honestly. You know,
that's what you're watching.
And I think this isn't a point that came up because we're talking about the best, but, you know, someone like Joe Buck or someone who's polarizing in this job, I think it stems from baseball because you watch a sport like baseball, 162 games, you're watching every day, and you're hearing homers. Guys talk about your team, that it's the biggest game of the year, and all of a sudden you have it someone calling it right down the middle. It's not a homer broadcast anymore. You know, if you go on Twitter during Game 7 of Astros Yankees right before Altuve hits the home run and doesn't want his shirt ripped off because he's cheating, 500 people are saying, "Oh, Buck hates the Yankees," and 500 people are saying, "Oh, Buck hates the Astros," and that's why, because we have homers calling baseball all year long, and then boom, it's the biggest game of the year, and this guy's calling it down the middle, which feels slanted because of how big those homers are. But I think if you're making a Mount Rushmore for local play-by-play guys, they're all going to be homers because that's what makes them great.
I agree. That's why I try to keep my Mount Rushmores to national guys. Because
Same. Yep.
You know, for that reason. But you're exactly right, Steve. You're exactly right.
All right. Very good. So that's going to wrap up this episode of Making Mount Rushmore. But before we go, let's see what everybody's got going on in terms of pod, social media. Where can you be found? Starting with you, Steve Bennett. Talk about your pod and what's going on over at Sportscasters.
Sure. The Sportscasters, it's the 10th year of the Sportscasters. January 11th was the 10-year anniversary. And have something really, really great coming up really soon. Someone is from a national platform is writing about me and the podcast, so I can't wait to be able to share that with everyone. And great guests so far this season already. And also I do a side project called the 24-inch podcast with a newcomer to this space that I handpicked named Dave Rollins, who's just a maniac in all the best ways, from New Jersey, and a Hulkamaniac. We talk about Hulk Hogan. It's really fun to do. My favorite thing is we read the news from whenever the match we're featuring is from. So if it's January of 84, we read the news from that month. Sort of a slight cap tip to Howard Stern and to Scott Criscolo on the Place to Be podcast with his pop culture. But this is more news-centric, more Robin Quivers than Scott. And then also I do the Adams Division podcast with Peter Winson. And we have one coming up where we're going to count down Hogan matches and Savage matches. We do that quarterly about 4 a year. So those are my three things. And for information, @sports_casters on Twitter. You can find everything there. And I can't wait for everyone to read the article when it comes out.
Yeah, very good. Let us know. We'll put it in the Place to Be Facebook group so everybody can check it out. Roger, what do you got going on?
Hey, thanks, Andy. So I have a total of two other shows now instead of just one. So I just started one with my buddy Logan Crossland, which is From Squared Circle to the Silver Screen. So we're reviewing movies that starred wrestlers. So we did our first show, and we looked at No Holds Barred, starring the aforementioned Hulk Hogan, which was a blast. And we have one coming up where we look at the Marine. So check that out if you're into movies and or wrestling. And then we also do This Week in the NFL / This Week in Sports with John Ryder and my dad, Senior. So senior was laid up with a pretty rough case of the coronavirus, unfortunately.
Ooh. Oh God.
So he was in rough shape, but is doing much better now, thankfully. He came home a few days ago, so as soon as he's up to it, we're gonna start recording again for this week in sports. So I would expect that in the next week or two or so. But yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
Well, get well, senior.
Yes, get well,
good
senior.
Ears good ears.
He gave us a good scare. We'll tell you that. So
all right. That's not good. I'm glad he's good.
Also, Roger, you are actually going to be on the next month's Blockbuster Rewind episode. You're joining us to talk about the Ocean's movies.
That's right. I am. See,
Looking forward to
my schedule more than me, Andy.
I can't wait for the Body Slam episode.
Yeah,
I was just about to say that, Steve. Oh, I love that movie.
That was on cable so much for years. Like,
I'm a big A-Team guy, so that was like
That
was Faceman's one he's had a few other big things too. Battlestar Galactica, I think, or some science fiction thing.
We actually have a new pod on the feed.
That's what he was on, right? Was it that show or was I wrong?
Battlestar Galactica. You start.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Very good. All right, Scott. What do you got? Do we have time?
Follow me on Twitter at PTB Pawfather, the PTB Wrestling Network, the fans feed. Listen to everything.
I'll be on the Place to Be Nation on the 8th. The day this comes out, I think.
Yes. I'm on that Steve one, will right? be joining us.
Yeah.
Yes. Steve will be joining.
We got Hogan and Flair, right? Hogan and Flair.
For the next Place to Be podcast.
Yeah. Hogan and Flair is the main event of
November
the show.
36. So look forward to that.
Also, you got what's going on with the store? You want to give that information before?
Hey, tpublic.com. Type PTBW in the search and show off the logos of all our great shows on hoodies, t-shirts, mouse pads, masks, all sorts of great stuff. But we're trying to get some alternate stuff, you know, great catchphrases, that kind of stuff, you know, as well. So dramatic pause. I think I'll have Andy Wright wear that one. some other great stuff. So yeah, tpublic.com and type PTBW in the search and get your stuff.
And also, it's my entrepreneurial almost 19-year-old daughter has started her own Etsy store, and she does tumblers and all stuff. So she's going to be start working on some Place of a Nation
awesome.
Merch as well. So you know, stickers, tumblers, t-shirts. Yeah, she's going to be doing her own stuff. You know, like I said, she's a creative kid and she just loves doing these things. Just made me a Place of the Nation cup just because, you know, making as she does logos, anything. So yeah, looking forward to supporting her and showing off our stuff.
Okay.
So I want to say a big thank you though to my guests, John D'Amato, Steve Bennett, the Cowboy Roger Morissette, and Scott Criscolo. I'm Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us on Making Mount Rushmore, and we'll see you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.
It's okay. Fucking it's okay.
Oh, God.